Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Tonight on The Readout.
You're confused. You think I'm on trial. These people are on trial for trying to steal an election in 2020. I'm not on trial, no matter how hard you try to put me on trial.
Correct. But from the beginning, the right has tried to make Trump's Georgia election interference trial all about DA Fannie Willis. And today, the judge found no actual conflict of interest, but did manage to gratuitously impugn her integrity. Also tonight, we need to have a serious reality check about the right-wing propaganda that Trump is somehow gaining historic levels of support among black voters. He wishes. But we begin tonight with the most American of realities. If you're a rich white guy, and especially if you're a celebrity and a former president, not only are you above the law, you are so above the law that if you get indicted for trying to overturn an election and thus overthrow the government, that case isn't even about you. Today, Fulton County Superior Court Judge Scott McAfee ruled that Fulton County DA Fannie Willis will not be disqualified from prosecuting the racketeering case against Donald Trump. Trump tried it. It didn't work. His case will be prosecuted in Georgia. MAGA Inc. failed to prove a conflict of interest, perhaps because there was no conflict of interest. But in making that ruling, Judge McAfee, a Federalist Society alumnus, managed to still help Donald Trump, ruling that because of a so-called appearance of impropriety, either Fannie Willis or the special prosecutor with whom she had a relationship must step down from the case. And so, Special Assistant District Attorney Nathan Wade resigned from the case just hours after the decision, writing, quote, "I am offering my resignation in the interest of democracy, in dedication to the American public, and to move this case forward as quickly as possible." Make no mistake, this was a victory for Fannie Willis, since the RICO case against Trump and his fellow defendants will go on. But the judge's decision also came with a strong rebuke of Willis's, quote, "lapse in judgment." And this is where we need to pause. Fannie Willis's lapse in judgment? Defense attorneys argue that Willis should have been removed from the case because of her relationship with Wade, with whom she hired in November of 2021. But let's remember what this case is actually about. Willis has charged Trump and 18 co-defendants with racketeering for their alleged actions in trying to overturn the 2020 election. Four have taken guilty pleas. But today, what we got to do in America was ask questions about Willis and Wade, when their romantic relationship began, where they traveled, and how much they paid for dinner, and about the woman prosecutors alleged had bad judgment. We're talking about everybody except the guy who tried to overthrow the government. The guy who, in a taped call, vaguely threatened Georgia's Republican Secretary of State and pressured him to steal an election.
All I want to do is this. I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more than we have, because we won the state.
It's a bizarre world. Bizarre, yet predictable. Trump is either the luckiest guy in the world, or this country was built for rich men like him to thrive. Two things can be true. Only in America can a case against a white man trying to overthrow an election morph into a debate over a black woman's consensual relationship and the vacations she took. Judge McAfee said Willis's romantic relationship raised the appearance of impropriety. He pointedly concluded that an odor of mendacity remains. He also described Willis's January speech before an historic black church in Atlanta as legally improper because she accused her critics of playing the race card by questioning her right to appoint Wade. What does that have to do with the RICO case against Trump and his co-defendants, you ask? Oh, right, nothing. Except that Judge McAfee, like Fani Willis, is up for re-election. He faces primary challengers. And for a conservative judge, one who already reduced the number of counts against Trump last week, and who, as part of his re-election media tour, appeared last week on a talk radio show hosted by a conservative Trump fan while we were all awaiting his decision, no odor of mendacity there, I suppose. I mean, if you can't give Trump an outright win by throwing out the case, since the law gives you no reason to do that, what better way to still be helpful than to give Trump and his right-wing media friends some talking points? I mean, he couldn't find anything unlawful about Fani Willis and her consensual relationship, so instead, he festooned his decision with gratuitous critiques of her behavior, tone-policing her attitude, and level of black lady sassiness, uppityness, you might say. Certainly helpful for his political future, and certainly helpful for Trump and the right-wing slime machine, who can continue to try to make this case about Fani Willis. If I'm being honest, it's giving special counsel Robert Hur, the self-declared Republican prosecutor who threw in gratuitous personal critiques of President Biden's memory and age like an amateur neurologist while explaining his decision not to prosecute him for keeping classified documents. Like Mr. Hur, Judge McAfee put a right-wing spin on his decision that didn't need to be there. And it rose like a delicious foam for the MAGA cult to devour. Today, America is breathlessly debating Fani Willis and not the adjudicated sexual abuser who defrauded banks and insurers, stole classified information and hid them in his bathroom and under his bed, and who is dogged by $500 million in legal debt that his brokest voters will pay for him, and who still, despite all of that, faces zero accountability in America, clearly, which was built for men like him. The man who long ago said this about sexually abusing women, but which also seems to apply to every other criminal thing that he has done.
It's like a magnet. You just, like, I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab them by the I can do anything.
When you're a star, you can do anything. If there is one thing that Trump ever said that is true, it's that. Joining me now is Paul Butler, MSNBC legal analyst and a former federal prosecutor, and Katie Fang, trial attorney and host of the Katie Fang Show. Friends, I have to play for you because, you know, earlier today on Morning Joe, Anand Giridharadas spoke my feelings because I've been all in my feelings about this all morning. My poor team, I've been all deep in my feelings about what's happening in Georgia. Let me just let you listen to what Anand Giridharadas had to say this morning on Morning Joe.
This is a case about racketeering, and not racketeering to like make some money behind a laundromat. This is a case about racketeering to end American democracy. And yes, there are people in that DA's office who, as flawed human beings, got into a loving relationship and took some trips. These are people who are normal human beings who made mistakes, who are remind us all up against someone who tried to end American democracy, which is the substance of the case.
Katie, I want to let you go first, because I feel like the woman of color in this case, even the media commentary on it, is still putting her on trial instead of the defendants. Let's put the mugshots up. These are the people on trial. Katie, your thoughts?
And that's what Fani Willis tried to refocus and recenter the conversation on when she was forced to take the stand to defend herself. And I want to say that although she waived any objections to a subpoena, Joy, to testify, did she really ever have options left? Because when you're under attack and your personal character is being assailed in a case, to Anand's point, which has nothing to do with her personal life, she had to take the stand. And when she did, she said, I'm not on trial. No matter how hard you try to put me on trial, I am not on trial. Those people that tried to steal the 2020 election, they're on trial. And she didn't say it, but we all heard it, right? And don't you forget it. And she was saying that to Judge McAfee, and she was saying that to America. My biggest concern about this evidence you're hearing from day one was the blanket allowance of the weaponization of the judicial system to conduct a smear campaign. And that's exactly what the bread and butter is for Michael Roman, the GOP operative who is the defendant in this case. He's being prosecuted for state RICO and other charges. That is how he rolls. And so that is exactly why we ended up having a multi-day, multi-hour evidentiary hearing about the personal lives of Nathan Wade and Fani Willis. But the undercurrent of reality that a lot of people don't feel comfortable talking about is the following. I don't disagree that if you're a prosecutor, you should be held to a standard and a very exacting one. And I believe Paul would agree with me on this, right? You should be held to an exacting standard because as a prosecutor, you hold the liberty of people in your hands. And so you should be the very best that you are as a lawyer, especially if you're a prosecutor. But the undercurrent of conversation that people are not having is the idea that if you listened to the commentary, it always devolved into the fact that it was, did she take the cash and did she run to the ATM with it? And what did she do with that cash? And cash boxes in your home. And who the hell has that type of cash in your home? I mean, it was the devolution of something that should have been up here, right? It should have been here. And so the thing that happened with the McAfee ruling from today was he could have ended the analysis at there was no actual conflict of interest because the law would have protected that analysis for him. And he could have stayed in that safe space and he could have said the burden wasn't met by the defense, which he did say. And because of that, I am not going to disqualify either of these prosecutors, but he didn't. And by going that one step further, going into the land of the Georgia State Bar, for example, going into that space and saying that there was all of this wrongdoing, he not only gave kerosene on the conflagration, which is the GOP and the Trump world and MAGA, but he also then created, as he noted, that quote, odor I don't even remember what the word
mendacity.
was.
Mendacity.
Mendacity, which if people tried to look it up would say it stinks. And then what he said, right? That's really what he's trying to say. Something stinks here. And I think that in doing so, he never really allowed Fani Willis to cure that defect. He says, you can cure this defect if one of you steps down. But when you kind of label it that way, you don't allow really for the curing of any defect, do you? And so then you allow this prosecution to continue tainted based upon the use of that language.
And not only that, I mean, he went so far, Paul, in his order, while he is, again, saying that she did nothing wrong. They found no wrongdoing. But what he then does is suggest other places that Trump's friends and friends and Trump himself might want to go. He talks about the state legislature. He talks about the bar. He essentially is serving up Fani Willis for more adjudication that maybe y'all should go after her law license. Maybe you should take her to court. Maybe she didn't tell the truth on the stand, suggesting alternatives because he knows he can't do anything about it. So to me, it is giving a her. He's saying, I'm still on your team. Let me help you because I can't twist the law to help you because they didn't break the law, but let me give you some suggestions. I found that offensive. Your thoughts?
I agree. And I want to co-sign what you said in the setup, Joy. Two things can be true at once. So it's true that Black women prosecutors like D.A. Willis are challenged more than anybody else, not because they're incompetent, but because they are Black women. And some people, like Donald Trump, have a problem with that. Remember, D.A. Willis and Nathan Wade have done a lot right. They persuaded two grand juries that charges were warranted. They got four defendants to plead guilty. But the other true thing in this case is that D.A. Willis messed up when she entered a romantic relationship with somebody whose paycheck she signed. So the judge was able to criticize her tremendous lack in judgment. That's what he said. He said her testimony was unprofessional and that she made bad choices. And I agree. It was gratuitous. He went out of his way to say that she may face consequences from the State Ethics Commission, the Georgia Bar, and the voters of Fulton County, even though at the same time, he acknowledged that the defense had not proven that Ms. Willis's conduct prejudiced anybody's right to a fair trial.
By the way, he also is facing the voters. and he went on a right-wing radio show of a Trump fan. One might question the propriety of that. I'm going to say that as well. And I also want to ask you, Katie Fang, about these other two pieces of information that we got today, and that is these two things. These are the two letters. This was the offer to resign and the acceptance of resigning. This is from Wade, the Wade Campbell firm, and also from Fannie Willis's office. So Nathan Wade writes, and I think this is important to note, that in taking the job, he says, you, the team on this case, and the entire office have my prayers for your safety and the success in the pursuit of justice. Because she also talks about the fact that he took the case in the first place. I compliment you, she writes, for the professionalism and dignity you have shown over the last 180, 165 days that you've endured threats against you and your family, as well as the unjustified attacks in the media and court and your reputation as a lawyer. But she also reminds people in her letter that she attempted to give the job, and so does he in his order, this judge, to someone else, the former governor of the state who wouldn't take the job because he was too afraid of MAGA. He was too afraid of facing them and the death threats, and he knew what would come. And so Nathan Wade took the job when no one else had the courage to take it. And that isn't talked about enough either. She didn't pick him because he was her boyfriend. She picked him because a former governor didn't have the cojones to do it.
Yeah, he wasn't. Nathan Wade wasn't her first choice. That was clear. That's uncontroverted evidence during the course of that hearing. And MSNBC has reporting that the reason why we didn't get that ruling until today, even though Judge McAfee had prepared that ruling, is because he, as in Judge McAfee and his family, have been receiving death threats. And so they wanted to have adequate security set up so that Judge McAfee would be safe. So this case is completely tainted with the idea that if somebody tries to stand up to do the right thing, that they're going to be getting a death threat. We heard that from Fannie Willis. We heard that from Fannie Willis's father. I did want to say one thing really quickly, Joy. I love Paul Butler. And because I love him, I'm going to disagree with him in the following way. And with respect, because I always disagree with respect. There was zero evidence that Fannie Willis did anything wrong. No evidence, right? Judge McAfee said there was no material financial benefit that was realized by Fannie Willis. He said that there was no conflict of interest because she had never started this investigation and prosecution and indictment to benefit herself. He made it clear that there was nothing wrong that she did. That in and of itself could have ceased the analysis, and that could have been the end of it. It didn't have to go any further. What is the hypocrisy that really bothers me is this purity test that has to be applied to everyone else but the Republicans. It's this purity test that you have to pass if you are not a member of the GOP. And to that point, it's Letitia James and Fannie Willis that are always the ones that get more scrutiny because of who they are. But if you're a Republican, it's okay because you can grab them by the you-know-what and get away with it.
Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court, Paul Butler, cried, screamed, you know, had a breakdown in front of the world, and no one questioned whether his comportment in that hearing meant he was unfit to be on the Supreme Court. Clarence Thomas and Sam Alito have taken what really look like bribes from billionaires to take them on fancy schmancy vacations. They sit on cases in which they shouldn't. His wife is an insurrectionist. He didn't feel he had to recuse. No one says these men made mistakes. And so I lovingly disagree with you as well. What mistake did she make? The people meet on the job all the time. They date people on the job all the time. This is not an unusual thing. Is it the best decision? I don't know. It didn't seem like it worked out very well. This is like he was the right man for her, whatever. But that has nothing to do with the RICO case, sir. And I'm gonna give you the last word. We went on too far.
I love my friends Joy and Katie, so I'm going to very respectfully disagree. When DA Willis was running, she ran against a sitting prosecutor who was embroiled in a sexual harassment lawsuit. He ultimately was successful, but DA Willis said that she would never be in a relationship with anybody who worked for her. When she broke that rule, she opened herself up. This was, in a sense, a self-inflicted wound. And in that way, it was a success for the defense. I don't think they ever really expected that the case would be dismissed. That's always a long shot after a grand jury indictment. But what the defense accomplished is dragging DA Willis and her lead prosecutor through the mud, treating the prosecutors like they were criminal defendants. And more importantly, the defense got the lead prosecutor kicked off the case. And the judge implied he'd be open to a gag order that would apply to the DA's office, but not the defense. So Trump would be able to say whatever he wanted, and DA Willis would not be able to respond. So in a sense, I wish she hadn't gone down this road. In that sense, it is a self-inflicted wound.
Okay, I wish we could do this like for another rest of the hour, but we have to go. We are way over, so I'm going to stop. We can fight this out on social media later. Paul Butler, Katie Fang, my friends, I appreciate you both. Coming up next on The Readout, truly, what is up with this narrative that's trying to sell us on the idea that black voters are flocking en masse to Trump? They just love Trump. We'll get to the bottom of that with a couple of actual experts next.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Today and every day, Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Lawmakers who oppose abortion are attacking Planned Parenthood, which means affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. The right to control our bodies and get the health care we need has been stolen from us. And now, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills that would block people from getting the sexual and reproductive care they need. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves health care. It's a human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies and against policies that interfere with decisions between patients and their doctor. Planned Parenthood needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, we can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future. That's PlannedParenthood.org/future.
We are now in the midst of an every 4-year ritual. We are told that black voters are on the verge of a history-making shift in allegiance from Democrats to Republicans. It's a cycle we went through in 2012, 2016, 2020, and 2022. This year's version is fueled by a number of hot takes from your resident Blexit proponents like Donald Trump Jr. and Candace Owens, super experts on the blacks. And they're getting back up from a recent New York Times Siena poll, which included just 119 voters, a number you could fit into a single cookout, which shows that 23% of black voters are preparing to vote for Donald Trump in November. That would be an historic swing for black voters who have consistently backed Democratic presidential candidates starting in the late 1930s during FDR's presidency. In fact, no Republican candidate has received that kind of black voter support since Dwight David Eisenhower. Thus far, we have seen no evidence that Trump has somehow become the new Eisenhower. I mean, based on what? Like, what did he do to become the new Eisenhower? Do explain. That said, there have been a plethora of articles, think pieces, and commentary telling us that Trump is different. The blacks just love him. In an attempt to unpack all of this, we've invited two women who have spent a lot of time actually talking to black voters, trying to figure out what is top of mind and if Trump really is convincing black folk to upend decades of history to vote Republican. Joining me now is Adrienne Shropshire, Executive Director of Black Pack, which partnered with polling firm Brilliant Strategies to survey black voters for the last 6 months. And Melanie Campbell, President and CEO of the National Coalition on Black Civic Participation, who conducted a separate survey among black women voters. Thank you both for being here. Melanie, I will start with you because your poll showed a higher level of support among black women who tend to vote like 96% for Democratic presidents. But your poll showed a relatively high level of support among black women for Donald Trump at 15%. What's going on?
Well, I think there is a level of anxiety, but also, Joy, what it showed, which is very different in all the years that I've been doing this work, black women are in what they call persuadable category, which means folks are going to have to work even harder to get us to turn out. There's a lot of anxiety, and most of it is driven by the economic anxiety, inflation, cost of living, cost of buying eggs and milk, things like that, just day-to-day living and having those concerns And the fact that you still have a high number of Black women who are, who say they would vote if the election were today, would vote for Biden and vote for Democrats, but it's not as high as it's always been.
And it's generational. Let me ask you this. And you're saying it's generational. And what you mean, younger voters are the ones who are less adherent.
Anyone under 50, and you get even closer, you get to the Gen Zs. Those over 50, he has a 71%. You know, say they would vote for Biden. So that, and you see that in all of the categories, whether you're talking about the economic indicators and other kinds of concerns, it falls on generational lines.
Well, let me go to you, Adrian, because your Black PAC did a poll in battleground states, Georgia, Michigan, North Carolina, Nevada, Ohio and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin. Your poll showed what I think has been more what we've seen over the years. Trump being reelected is the biggest concern among African-Americans in those swing states in your poll. The rise of white supremacy and white nationalism was the second biggest concern. Third was the lack of economic opportunity. And then the Supreme Court ruling taking back rights was number five behind rising crime and violence. What are you seeing as you're talking, as you're talking with Black voters? And these are men and women.
Yeah, so we have been over the last 6 months doing polling in battleground states and focus groups as well. And I think we've learned a little bit about the support level that Black voters have for Donald Trump. And I would say that the two that are most important, one is that we have not seen the support level for Trump change since 2020. What we're seeing in terms of support is the exact same that we saw on Election Day, both in terms of exit polls and the validated Pew numbers. The exact same support between 7% and 9%. That's one. The support levels haven't changed. The second thing, as you just said, is we've been asking voters what is the greatest threat to the Black community. And the number one answer in each of the polls is the reelection of Donald Trump, followed closely by white supremacy. So Black voters see the single greatest threat to the Black community is Donald Trump returning to the White House and taking adherence to white supremacy along with him. This does not sound like an electorate that is on the verge of the largest political racial realignment in history. And as you said, we've seen that kind of racial realignment in the 30s and in the 60s, but it's usually because Black voters are running from the party that embraces racism and white supremacy, not running to it.
That is, I guess, where I get confused, Melanie, right? Because I haven't seen anything anecdotally that shows any shift toward Trump. So are what your voters, the voters that your organization spoke with, is what they're expressing a generalized anxiety, a desire for Biden to change some policy? Is it Gaza? Is this a message? You know, Michael Harrod wrote something brilliant. He said, perhaps Black voters are criticizing Joe Biden like they criticize every presidential candidate. Black Democrats were dissatisfied with Bill Clinton's centrist policies heading into the 96 election. While Barack Obama has always been popular among Black voters, his approval rating among Black voters reached its lowest point in the months before the 2012 election. Is that what we're seeing here? Just an expression of dissatisfaction that's showing up in polls?
I think that there's still a high level of saying that they feel that the Harris administration has done more, but they haven't done all. There's more work that they have to do. There's still concerns. People's day-to-day lives are impacted. What Adrian said, even in our poll that was conducted, it was partnership with Essence and done by His Strategies, reflects that the issue of racism is still high. You know, this is our ninth year doing this poll, and during this administration, the issues around economics are high, but so is the issue around concern around racism and discrimination. And that's reflected in what's going on in our day-to-day lives, especially as Black women who are feeling that we're under attack. And that's not a conjecture. That's real time. And I think that's what the anxiety is. There's some hope in there, too, right? But there is a lot of anxiety and stress. And I think that's part of it. And will the Biden-Harris administration, if they get a second term, be able to address that?
And that's the thing, Adrian, is that the stress and anxiety around racism is about Trump. It's about Trump. He's running around with Nazis. I don't see how that makes you support Trump.
That's right. And it's Trump But it's also everything that the Republican Party stands for. So when we think about every issue that the Black voters care about, whether it's voting rights or abortion or Social Security or health care or police reform, what we know is that the Republican Party and Donald Trump sit on the opposite side of every single one of those issues, and not in ways that it's just good faith, you know, disagreement. It's in ways that are dangerous, that block Black voter Black people's progress at every point. And so in some ways, with this notion that we're on the verge of this racial realignment, you know, it really seems like someone's deepest fantasy kind of dressed up as political analysis that requires all of us to suspend everything that we know about American history and just live in the alternative reality that's being created.
Or maybe it's just the gold sneakers. According to Trump, it's just the blacks love the sneakers. That's what he seems to want to believe. I'm not buying it. Adrian Shropshire, Melanie Campbell, thank you both very much. And coming up, the Irish Prime Minister's annual St. Patrick's Day visit to Washington. But it's not all positive vibes with the crisis in Gaza very present at the event. There's a storied history of the Irish feeling solidarity with the Palestinian people. And we will tell you about all that next.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
President Biden was in his element today as a self-proclaimed son of Ireland. The president, who frequently talks about his Irish roots and quotes Irish poets, hosted Ireland's Prime Minister, Leo Varadkar, for St. Patrick's Day festivities. It's not surprising that America's third president of Irish heritage is more than happy to take part in the annual event celebrating American-Irish friendship. But what might surprise you is the shadow on the festivities cast by the war in Gaza. Ireland's prime minister has been a vocal critic of Israel's military offensive. In fact, Ireland has long been one of the most pro-Palestinian nations in the world, despite being nowhere near the Middle East. And the reason why is pretty straightforward. It's rooted in a shared history of British colonialism and the experience of a seemingly intractable and traumatic conflict, which for Ireland ended with the 1998 Good Friday Peace Agreement. It also involves the same British colonial cast of characters. The Washington Post pointed out, some note that Arthur Balfour, whose 1917 letter promised British support for the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people, had earlier in his career served as a chief secretary for Ireland and opposed Irish home rule. Today, President Biden voiced agreement with the Irish Prime Minister for a ceasefire in Gaza as soon as possible. He also praised Senator Chuck Schumer for his unprecedented speech criticizing Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
He made a good speech, and I think he expressed a serious concern shared not only by him, but by many Americans.
In the meantime, some much-needed emergency food aid arrived today. The first private aid ship, Open Arms, carrying 200 tons of food, arrived off the coast of Gaza. International mediators continue to work to broker a ceasefire in Gaza. Hamas put forward a proposal that includes the release of Israeli hostages in exchange for the release of 100 Palestinians who were serving life sentences. Israel's government called the demands unrealistic, but said it would evaluate the proposal. We'll continue to monitor developments, and we'll be right back. Now that the presidential election is officially a rematch between President Biden and Donald Trump, the messaging coming from the right on the question, are you better off than you were 4 years ago, is getting more and more laughable. Here's Fox host Sean Hannity last night.
Democrats will call Republicans racist, sexist, xenophobic, homophobic, Islamophobic, transphobic, that want dirty air and water. In other words, Democrats are using fear and division to mask what has been a terrible 4 years under Biden. I repeat, they cannot run on are you better off than you were 4 years ago. This is all they have left.
Well, he did get a lot of things right about the Republican Party. But like most right-wingers, he's overlooking the part where 4 years ago, Donald Trump was president and COVID had just been declared a national emergency. Meanwhile, new RNC chair Michael Whatley made a similar attempt today.
At the end of the day, this comes down to a very simple contrast between President Trump and President Biden. Were you better off 4 years ago than you are today? The answer for this entire country is no. I mean, yeah, we are better off today, or we will be better off.
Oops. We're better off today. We're better off yesterday. Today, no. Wait a minute. Hold on. Actually, he was right. We are better off now than we were 4 years ago. Earlier this morning, Morning Joe economic analyst Steve Rattner fact-checked three of Trump's favorite attack lines against President Biden: crime, energy, and the debt and deficit.
You can see that violent crime actually since 2020 has dropped by 15%, 339 violent crimes per 100,000 people. It's below any place it was during the Trump administration. We have had record energy production under the Biden administration. This combines nuclear, fossil fuels, and renewables. And you can see here that we have never had energy production this high. Because of his tax cut, the deficit was going up, 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 and then, of course, COVID hit. And under Biden, he's actually brought it down because of that huge deficit. When he talks also about how he was going to pay off the debt during his first term, he, in fact, added more debt than any other president in history.
Joining me now, Fernand Amandi, Democratic pollster and MSNBC political analyst, and Michael Steele, former RNC chair, co-host of The Weekend on MSNBC and host of the Michael Steele podcast. Okay, Michael Steele, inventor of the term drill, baby, drill. Think I don't remember that because I know you, my friend. Crime is down, energy production at record levels. We are energy independent, more drilling than ever in human history, deficit down. And none of the Republicans, they keep flubbing the are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? Because 4 years ago, we were all stuck in our houses because COVID had ruined the world. How are Republicans going to run when they can't answer that question?
they'll find other things to talk about for sure. There's a lot that they'll throw on the wall. We know that. But the reality of it is exactly what you've just said. It is going to be a very difficult narrative in the face of the facts, the statistics, the numbers. And while, yes, we know a lot of folks out there may not feel all of that right now, here's the projection. Over the course of this spring and summer, all of that will start to settle in. Those numbers, those folks will catch up to the numbers, if you will. That feeling will catch up with the numbers because they'll see it. Yes, there are going to be some segments, sectors of the economy where the prices may be higher, but they won't be nowhere near what they were at the height of inflation. They will be nowhere near where they were during our, you know, COVID stretch of dealing with supply chain issues and so forth. So the narrative for Republicans, they really want to ask that question because I think in the main, the American people were going to say, well, yeah, kind of, yes, I am. And just as a nod out, you know, if, you know, Donald Trump didn't drill, baby, drill. Joe Biden did. Thank you very much, Mr. President, for applying my little bit of slogan to what your efforts. So, and Donald Trump, just take drill, baby, drill out your mouth.
Because he did it. Biden did what you suggested. You know who also wasn't better off 4 years ago, or actually more like 3 years ago? Mike Pence, because Trump tried to kill him. Trump tried to get him hung. So now he said, you know what? I'm off this train. Here's Mike Pence.
It should come as no surprise that I will not be endorsing Donald Trump this year. During my presidential campaign, I made it clear that there were profound differences between me and President Trump on a range of issues, and not just our difference on my constitutional duties that I exercised on January the 6th. I mean, as I have watched his candidacy unfold, I've seen him walking away from our commitment to confronting the national debt. I've seen him starting to shy away from a commitment to the sanctity of human life.
From the right, Fernand, he's saying he will, when your former vice president says he is not willing to endorse you and then attacks you from the right, this is unhelpful, I would guess.
Well, the good news for Mike Pence is his back doctors has found that there is a spine there after all. It only took about 8 years to find it. But Joy, you know, this is a big deal, a BFD, as President Biden would say, because a lot of folks didn't think that Mike Pence would go this far. In other words, stopping short of endorsing Donald Trump. And I think the question now becomes, Joy, do other Republicans like what Mike Pence did today? Do they follow suit? Does this now mean Nikki Haley now has a little bit more room to say, you know what, I'm not going to endorse Donald Trump either? And that then starts to lead to a domino effect. Because in my judgment, I feel that the best surrogates for the Biden campaign going in between now and November are the Michael Steeles of the world, the former and current Republicans, especially those who served with President Trump, that say under no circumstances can we allow this dangerous dictator who plans to be a dictator, his own words on day one, regain power and back into the Oval Office. So I think this is a major development for the campaign in 2024.
And Michael, you know, he said he would never vote for Biden, but he doesn't have to say that. I've always said that a third party option helps Biden because they don't have to vote for Biden. They don't have to say they want Biden. They just don't have. They just have to say they're not going to vote for Trump. Right.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, I just caution to be careful with the third party option because, you know, there are numbers out there right now that are showing Robert F. Kennedy Jr., as you play the scenarios out, pulling about 12-15%. That's a big number. And it does matter where that number comes from. So there's truth in what you say, but you have to understand what is the makeup of his base, if you will. Now, asking Aaron Rodgers to be his vice president tells us it's not really serious. But okay, you know, that do more of that, please, okay? at the end of the day, and it's no slight to Aaron Rodgers. Even Aaron Rodgers is like, really? Is that a conversation we should be having? But the reality of it is you have that piece. But Fernand puts his finger on, I think, a very important point, Joy, and you and I have sort of talked back and forth on this. There's a large segment, cadre of voters out there in my bucket, if you will, the Republicans and former Republicans who are in no way planning to play with this Republican Party and certainly not his nominee for president. Joe Biden did a very smart and politically well-calculated thing when he came out of the gate after the State of the Union and said, and certainly after Super Tuesday, I need you. I'm a president for you.
And went for them.
And so they need to churn that as much as they can.
And very quickly, Fernand, to you, RNC, meanwhile, is saying no more minority outreach. And you've got the governor of Florida saying we've got ships in the water to essentially make sure Haitians drown at sea. They won't be coming in. So they're still showing distaste, let's just say, for folks of color. Not helpful on the Republican side.
No, I mean, it's all about the cruelty. And, you know, they're still playing dog whistle. But this is bullhorn politics to the white supremacist base, which is what is at the heart of the MAGA movement. Remember also, Joy, that some of these programs that were earnest, I guess, efforts in the old RNC to try and do outreach.
Yeah.
It's now the Trump RNC. It's a financial laundering mechanism to pay off Trump's bills now. Remember that.
Exactly. Don't go anywhere. Fernand and Michael are sticking around to play our favorite game, Who Won the Week, and that's right after this quick break. Well, we made it to the end of another week, which means it's time to play our favorite game. Aha! Who won the week? Back with me, Fernand Amandi and Michael Steele. Mighty Michael Steele, who won the week?
Donald Trump won the week. As you could see, it pains me to say, but he did. He has twisted the American court system into proverbial knots. The fact that he's been able to effectively delay his trials to beyond the election day. He's worked the system and it's worked for him.
And with C-list lawyers, wild. I wish I could argue with you, Fernand. Bring me up. Who won the week?
I'm going to bring you up, Joy. The winner of the week is Congressman Ken Buck, who delivered a dish of revenge, not just cold, but unexpectedly, denying Mike Johnson a critical seat in that shrinking House majority for Republicans and also dealing a double dose of revenge to Lauren Boebert, forcing her out of one race and meaning that the three most terrifying words to Republican are almost about to pass Speaker Hakeem Jeffries.
Listen, I said bring me up, and now I am up. I'm all the way up. That is so true. All right, and now I'm so up that I'm going to say my Who Won the Week is the great and glorious Miss Merle Evers Williams. Her birthday is Sunday, y'all. She is turning 91 years young, fresh, and adorably cute. She is fabulous. She is fly, and she is still a fierce fighter for justice. Merle Evers Williams, she wins every week for me because I think she's great. Fernand Amandi, Michael Steele, also great. Both of you. Thank you very much. And be sure to join Michael on the weekend tomorrow and Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern. And that is tonight's readout.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.